Morning. It's great to be with you all. My name, again, is Josh Henderson. I'm the new assistant pastor at Christ the Redeemer down in Portland. And my wife and I just moved up to Maine in September from most recently Boston area. And we have really just come to love Maine. We love to be here. And I'm happy to be with you all. It's great to worship. I worshiped with you guys this morning and now again at this 10:30 service. So thanks for having me. I hope to be back at some point. And at Christ the Redeemer, we've been working our way through the book of Mark over the course of a year. We've taken some breaks here and there. And I'm kind of dropping you guys right into the tail end of Mark. Mark chapter 13. We're nearing the end of the book, pun intended, because this is a chapter about the end times. It's a really challenging chapter. There is a lot of perplexing things going on in Mark 13. And Jesus, I think, is challenging us in a lot of ways, but this is also a really hope-filled chapter. It's about both the physical destruction of the temple in Jerusalem, but it's also about the future return of Jesus himself. Now, there's a phrase that has been coming up a lot in the news cycle. Maybe you have seen it at some point. I read it a lot in the fall, particularly as we were entering into colder weather and there were concerns that the pandemic would get that much worse through the winter, which we've seen somewhat happen here. And the phrase is pandemic fatigue. Pandemic fatigue. You know, I think when the pandemic first set in almost a year ago now, last spring, I certainly, and I think many others, imagined the pandemic to be more like a 100-meter sprint. It was going to be really difficult and tough, but we were just going to power through, put our heads down, cross the finish line, and just be done with it. But at this point, I think we can more realistically see that the pandemic is much more like a grueling uphill marathon, where we thought we were near the end, but it's still just hard and difficult, and we're really not sure how we're going to put one foot in front of the next. Even with the hope of a vaccine and so on, we're still just tired from the pandemic. We are tired. We're tired of waiting, for the time that masks, like this one that I keep adjusting, and probably will throughout the sermon. As one NPR put it, we're longing for the day when our masks can be souvenirs and no longer survival gear. We're longing for when we can get together with friends and family without fear of the virus or just the strained relationships that come with how do you even get together safely and all the disagreements that come with that. Which is to say, pandemic fatigue is very real. I think we've all experienced it in different ways. And I think our waiting, you know, our longing, our hope for the pandemic to be over, it can quickly morph into this kind of despair. It can lead to frustration, unhealthy eating habits, drinking habits, media usage, withdrawal from community, you know, all these different things we've seen set in different ways. And I think if we're honest, we often see how pandemic fatigue kind of bleeds into a spiritual fatigue. Now, to combat this fatigue, public health experts, so the people that are like experts on viruses that are trying to tell us how to live so that the virus will be minimized, are reminding us in this tough stretch of the pandemic to stay vigilant, to stay alert, hang in there. You know, keep wearing your mask, keep avoiding super large gatherings, keep physical distancing, and so on. In other words, they're saying, be on guard, endure through the pandemic. This is difficult. Now, there's a parallel dynamic, and I think in a much greater way in our passage, where Jesus is urging his followers, those same 12 followers and ultimately all of his followers in all times and places, to hang in there, to be vigilant, to endure through the hardship that they will inevitably experience in this world. You know, whether it's disease or whether it's broken relationships, living in an uncertain world, just dealing with our own sin and frailty, these things make us tired. They make us often lose hope, lose strength to go on living as God has called us to live. And they can make us feel like we can't endure, like we're on this long uphill marathon where we're struggling to get one foot in front of the next. And I think this passage ultimately forces us to ask in a really big picture way, where does our hope lie? Where does our hope lie? What's going to actually enable us to endure the fatigue, the hardship that inevitably comes from living in a fallen, broken world, which we've experienced in a really pointed way through this pandemic season? We have to ask, does our ultimate source of hope right now lie in, you know, merely wishing for life to go back to the way it was before the pandemic? Or are we being fueled by an eager hope for something much bigger, much more redemptive, much more eternal? You know, Jesus does something, I think, pretty powerful in this passage. He's telling us, you know, don't look around at the circumstances of your life in this world for an ultimate sense of hope. Don't try to distract yourself from the hardships in this life. No, rather, look to the future. Look to the time that Jesus will come again. The main point I want to make out of this passage, there's so much that could be said about Mark 13, but the main point I want to make is, as we have confidence in Jesus' future return, we should wait on him in the present, in the here and now, with an active endurance and an expectant hope. So waiting on Jesus with an active endurance and waiting on Jesus with an expectant hope. First, an active endurance. A little bit more about this passage. Mark 13, Jesus is speaking with his disciples, but he's also speaking to them within earshot of the crowds that would often follow Jesus around to hear more of his teaching. And he's explaining this reality that both the huge, massive temple in front of them would be destroyed soon, and also that Jesus himself would come again. There are a lot of challenging things in this passage. There are things that, frankly, are not that clear. And if you look at different commentaries on Mark 13, there's often like six different views of everything that's going on in this passage in terms of some of the details. And there's actually entire commentaries just written on Mark 13. It's one of the few chapters of the Bible that has a whole commentary on it. And I think sometimes overemphasizing things that are less clear about the end times can sometimes be distracting from what Jesus is ultimately reminding us of and pointing us to. And so I'm going to dive down a little bit more on the things that are clear, that Christians agree on, which is to say, we don't want to lose the forest for the trees at this particular moment. And what's abundantly clear in this passage is that Jesus will return. He's going to return and restore all things, and that directly impacts how we live in the present, in the here and now. And what Jesus is really doing here is he's helping his followers, us, connect the dots between two major chapters of what we might call redemptive history. He's connecting the dots between his life ministry and his pending death and resurrection, where he pays the penalty for our sin, he redeems us, he puts us into right relationship with God, and he's connecting it to this final chapter, what we might call the restoration chapter, where Jesus will come again and make things completely new. And so what we find ourselves in, including the disciples who he's talking to in the actual passage, is we find ourselves in between these things. We find ourselves waiting. We find ourselves living the Christian life, not so much in a 100-meter sprint, but more in a grueling uphill marathon. We're between these two chapters where we are looking for this return to Jesus. And in these opening verses, again, I mentioned they're one hill over from this massive temple. Now, just a kind of architecture side note, when I always envision the temple, I would often picture like a large cathedral like you would see downtown in a big city. And this is not like that. This is far bigger. This is a building that is 1.5 million square feet. And it had stones as big as 45 feet wide and 12 feet high. This was an awe-inspiring structure, particularly in the first century. And this was the center of Jewish life. This was the gravity of Jewish life was around this massive temple. It's a moment like you might have the first time you see like the New York City skyline and you just see how massive those buildings are. This is the kind of experience the disciples are having as they're one hill over from the temple, observing it. And Jesus kind of kills the moment for these guys. He kind of throws some cold water on them as they get excited about looking over the temple. He says, you see all this? You see this temple? This is actually going to come down. It's going to come down stone by stone. It's going to be destroyed. So what is Jesus doing here? I think I just broke my mask, so I should probably switch this out. I'm going to pause here. Hopefully the first and last time I ever break a mask during a sermon. Maybe one of these days I won't have to have a mask on while I preach. I made a joke the first week that we did this at our church. There's a early church father called Gregory of Nazianzus who often like talked about pastors as being physicians of the soul. And so I was like, now, as a physician of the soul, I also get to wear a physician's mask while I preach. So there you go. All right, so we're talking about the temple. So, massive structure. Jesus is saying this thing's going to come down in the near future. So, in the first 23 verses of chapter 13, Jesus is actually talking specifically about a short-term prophecy. He's literally talking about the destruction of the temple. And this was kind of a prototype of the final judgment to come. So the first century Jews, a little bit of background, they had a really tumultuous relationship with their Roman rulers. They had some autonomy, the Jewish people did, but ultimately they had to submit to Rome. And in AD 66, so after the life and ministry of Jesus, about a generation later, a more radical group of Jews come to power in Jerusalem, and they try and overthrow their Roman rulers. And it does not go well at all. And the Roman rulers bring in their military, and they just brutally crush the Jewish people, including destroying the temple. So this is a really rough time for the Jewish people. And this is what Jesus is forecasting here, this brutal campaign against Jerusalem. And in zooming in on these specific events, he's telling his followers in verses like 9 to 13, essentially, be prepared. Be prepared. There is significant hardship ahead. As you follow me, as you're called to proclaim the gospel to the world, you're going to face hatred. You're going to face death. Many of the disciples do indeed face death for proclaiming the gospel. But Jesus is saying, endure and you will be saved. Endure and you'll be saved. In verses 14 to 23, which we did not read, Jesus zooms in even further onto the troubling events of the destruction of the temple. And this would have surely run completely contrary to what the disciples were expecting. From what we know about earlier passages about the disciples, they still are kind of viewing Jesus as a way to like worldly acclaim and power. They're seeing Jesus as a one-way ticket and kind of a front row seat to the establishment of this worldly kingdom of which they will be at the forefront of. But Jesus keeps challenging that. He keeps disorienting them. He keeps kind of keeping them on their back feet. Jesus then zooms back out, and his prophecy becomes much bigger picture, far bigger than this massive temple. It's here that Jesus prophesies about his future return. So in verses 32 to 37, we get this short parable where Jesus compares his future return to like a master leaving his house, putting his servants in charge. And what he's referencing here is his resurrection, Jesus leaving the world for the time being, and his followers are on watch. And he tells them, stay awake, stay on guard, endure while I'm away. And so now we're beginning to get a clearer picture of the dynamic that Jesus is getting at. He's saying, be on guard, endure, stay awake, which is to say, these are words for people that get tired. These are words for people that get tired. They're words for people like us. How are we prone to tiredness in the Christian life? There's so many ways, so many things that could be said here. We're tired from our own sin, from our tendency to worship comfort and wealth and control, or we're tired from the hardships of losing loved ones or strained relationships or work that is endlessly fatiguing and frustrating. These things make us spiritually tired, makes it challenging to endure. And yet Jesus is reminding us that the future reality of his return, it impacts us in the present. Namely, it should move us to this kind of active endurance. Now, I think I've noticed in myself, and I'm likely you all as well, you may have noticed this in yourselves, but through the pandemic, it can be easy to feel like we're barely hanging in there. Whether it's you're more isolated, or you're drowning in Zoom calls, or childcare, or all of the above. You know, and Jesus is calling his people to this active endurance, even as we live in this already not yet time, where we're still navigating the challenges of our own sin, we're navigating the challenges of living in a fallen world, and Jesus is saying, hang in there, have this active endurance. So what does that look like? You know, I think big picture endurance looks like continually turning away from ourselves, from our sinful desires, and turning back to Jesus. It looks like leaning into the community of the church, even if it's in this, you know, unique format we find ourselves in, where we're partly online and spaced out physically in the room. It looks like leaning into Scripture, leaning into worship, leaning into this mission that Jesus invites his people into. When I first wrote this sermon, this was a sermon I wrote back in December, actually. And this was like as the pandemic was taking kind of a dark turn as we moved into the winter. And so I was wrestling through some thoughts, you know, what does it mean to live as the church through this particularly troubling time of the pandemic? Because I think there's some helpful things in this passage. And this, I think first, if I can offer just a few thoughts, I think this passage reminds us to keep the mission of Jesus as our central mission. To proclaim the good news of who he is to our neighbors and to the world, even in the midst of significant hardship. We see these words to Jesus directly to his disciples. Even as you face the most difficult of circumstances, even giving up your own lives, you're called to advance this mission of Jesus, proclaiming the good news of who he is. Secondly, I would say we need to remain in community. We should remain in community. You know, we need each other to live the Christian life. And I think the gravity of the pandemic and all of the measures that come with it often are to pull us apart and to keep us separated. Obviously, these are to preserve life and make sense, but we still need community. We still need people, whether that's, you know, a Zoom call or gathered outside or inside safely, whatever it might be. But we still need Christian community to spur one another on, to help each other live the Christian life. The image that came to my mind was when we first moved here in September, I went mountain biking with this group of guys from our church that are really into mountain biking. I am not a mountain biker, but I was like, it sounds fun. I'd love to go. And so I went with them, and they're all like super good. They let me borrow a bike. And the place that we went, it just had an immediate like long uphill climb. You know, I was envisioning like downhill mountain biking. They're like, yeah, we're going to get there, but we got to go uphill first. And these guys all just like start zipping up the hill, like no big deal. And I'm like, of course, in the back, kind of like limping my way up. I had to like walk over some parts and just like, what are these guys doing? But the fact that they were ahead of me and they just kept going, like it spurred me on. It kind of pushed me to keep going. And I think it was this helpful picture of the reality that we need each other. We need each other to spur one another on, to point one another to Jesus. You know, and lastly, something I've noticed in my own life through this unique season of pandemic has been the need to prioritize time with Jesus, to kind of lean into this needing a deep dependence on Jesus that comes through, you know, healthy rhythms of prayer and scripture reading. You know, I think it's an opportunity to really lean in to that dynamic. And then one final thing I want to point out that I missed this the first time I kind of took a few reads through this passage as I was sermon prepping. I totally missed this. But Jesus reminds his followers of something significant. They're on the brink of, they're about to be sent out into the world to proclaim the gospel and face significant challenge. And Jesus says one particular thing. He says, the Spirit's with you. The Spirit is with you in the midst of hardship. So he's saying, hang in there. God has not left his people alone. He won't leave his redemptive work unfinished. In this, you know, marathon of the Christian life, the Spirit is with us, nourishing us, encouraging us, sending us out. God's presence is with us. And I think that's motivation to endure, to continue to lay our lives down for the sake of the world. We know that we're not doing it alone. God's Spirit is with us. So my second point is waiting on Jesus' return with an expectant hope. You know, the disciples in this interaction with Jesus kind of give us a clue about where their hope lies. You know, they're looking at the temple, they're awing at it, they are just like struck by it. Not only because of its physical beauty and its magnificence and scale, but the temple, again, it was the center of gravity of the Jewish world. This is where their redemption was found. This is where right relationship was found, was in and through this temple. And yet, this apparent source of ultimate hope is being undermined by Jesus, right? He says it's going to be destroyed. And these are the kind of words that begin to get Jesus in trouble with Jewish authorities, ultimately Roman authorities, that leads to his death. And the whole rest of this passage, Jesus is redirecting the hope of his followers. He's redirecting their hope from something circumstantial, some kind of religious system where they can just check all the boxes and white knuckle with endurance to get through in order to find hope. Rather, he's redirecting their hope to him, to Jesus himself, who is going to become this new temple and who's going to actually come again and restore all things. And so eventually it's, you know, after the resurrection that the disciples finally get this. They see that their hope lies not in the physical building of the temple. Their hope is in Jesus himself. And so for our purposes, you know, the future return of Jesus, I think it does a couple things. It pushes us to ask, where in the present might we try and find our ultimate sense of hope rather than look to Jesus? Where are we more tempted to look to our circumstances than to Jesus himself? You know, whether it's right now for me, you know, it can often be like in the vaccine and, you know, getting life back to normal. I just want normal life circumstances. Those are good things to want, right? We should pray for these things to happen. But we have to also honestly look at what's our ultimate hope lies in. Not in our circumstances, but in Jesus himself. You know, I think we, like the disciples who face significant hardship, we are so tempted to look around rather than to look up. But Jesus prophetically reminds us, you know, circumstances in this world, as we all know from our experience, go sideways all of the time. The only source of meaningful hope comes from him. And so Jesus, in this command to stay awake, to be on guard about his return, you know, these are calls to stay vigilant with a purpose, to be shaped and formed by not the present, but to be shaped and formed by the future, by what is to come. And so in modern culture, you know, when we talk about the return of Jesus, you know, not only can this sound a little far-fetched, but it can also sound a little bit like fear-mongering or manipulative, like Jesus is coming back, so you better be good, you know, be on your best behavior kind of thing. But I think if we think that way, we really miss a critical dynamic here in how Jesus is communicating the reality of his return to his people, to the ones he loves. And this is a joyful, good news reality. You know, I was thinking about when I initially wrote this sermon, I was thinking about waiting and what did I used to wait for with a sense of joy, of this kind of expectant hope of getting what I'm waiting for. And the first thing that came to mind was when I was a kid, probably until I was like 10 years old, every Christmas morning, I would wake up at like 3, 4 a.m. and just lay in the bed overly excited. And I was like giddy. I just couldn't even go back to sleep because I was so excited about the prospect of like running into the living room and opening up gifts and seeing what I got. And it was this kind of hope fueled not by fear or something like that, but fueled by love. And I think as we wrestle with this passage, as we think about what's going to actually move us to endure the challenges of living with our sin, living in a fallen world, we have to look at the actual love of Jesus himself. Again, this season's kind of pointed out that our circumstances, if we didn't already realize it, our circumstances in this world are frail. They're faltering. They make us tired. Pandemic fatigue quickly morphs into spiritual fatigue. And all of this, Jesus is concerned about how we wait, how we live in the here and now. So how are we going to stay awake? How are we going to endure? Again, we have to see Jesus. in the midst of the pandemic fatigue, I know there's been like article after article about it, and we've all read things and seen things on TV. But one thing I've sensed in all of the writings about longing for the pandemic to be over is this subtle longing for eternity. You know, as the NPR opinion piece put it, for the day when masks are souvenirs and not survival gear. We're longing for this world to be set right. And here Jesus is offering an answer to that longing. And, you know, actively enduring these challenges, it's only something we can do when we really see Jesus for who he is. Because Jesus entered into this world, he lived a perfect life, and then he endured for our sake, on our behalf, he endured a brutal death. He was raised again in order to secure this finish line on this marathon of a life. These things have been secured. It's not something we do by our own effort. It's something that Jesus does on our behalf. So this call to stay awake, to endure, to be vigilant, this isn't a call to white knuckle it, to train harder, to be better, to clean ourselves up. This is a reminder to keep your eyes fixed on Jesus, the one who endured everything for you in order to bring you into relationship with God, in order to secure this finish line in which he says he will come again. And so this is also a reminder to us that this is a source of joy for his people, for God's people to know this reality that Jesus is indeed going to return. This isn't something that strikes fear into our hearts, it should strike joy. You know, one of my favorite things about my son's age right now, my oldest son, I mentioned I have an 8-week-old and a 2.5-year-old. And this is probably just a product of him being a toddler. I'll be surprised if this lasts much longer. Maybe I'll win a parenting award or something if it does. But when I come home from work, like, he can hear me opening the door. He gets super excited. I can just like hear him from across the house screaming, "Dada, dada, dada," and then he runs in and he's just so pumped that I have arrived home. And it's like day in and day out he does that. I hope it continues, but you know, we'll see. He's a kid. And I think that picture is really helpful. It's this joy of my return home. You know, the master coming back home and the servant seeing him come. And I think in a much greater way, as we remember the love of Jesus, his love that he poured out on us, the fact that he has secured our salvation, he's going to come back again for us. Pandemics, disease, sin, these things will not have the last word, but rather Jesus will. We can look to him with this sense of confident hope, with a spirit of joy, knowing that he is going to come back for his people out of his love for us. And so as we navigate the challenges of life that we inevitably will continue to experience, be reminded we can take our eyes off of our circumstances and fix our eyes on the one who loves us deeply and is instilling this sense of confident hope in us in and through himself. So let's pray. Lord, we are thankful for who you are, how you love us, how you entered into this world and endured the suffering and hardship of the cross in order to redeem us. And Lord, as we wait in the present, help us to wait with this active endurance. As you call us to love the world and proclaim the gospel, sustain us, Lord. Remind us of your presence with us and give us a hope. Help us to come to the Lord's table here in a minute with our heads held high, with a spirit of joy. We ask these things in your name. Amen.